Everyone,
Wait,
and
wait, wait, hold
welcome.
on.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our Thursday night master class. Woohoo! Great showcase for what our interns are doing. And I don't know the lineup because, like I said, I'm walking on my phone. So it's great that you all came to listen, and if you are an intern, please make sure you're clocked in. Get credit for your time. And I will leave it to Marjorie to introduce the first contestant.
We have so the agenda tonight is James Norman, then we have Michael Celestin, and then we have Edward Fernandez. So let's start with James Norman. Come on down.
All right, if you give me just a moment, I'll get my screen shared here and we'll begin.
Ready.
Sorry, Steve, just want to get it so it'll share correctly here. I found out the other night I cannot just stream my screen. I have to actually load it through the Teams live PowerPoint viewer. So, can you see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. This evening, I'm going to talk about resume cover letters, something where many of us are going to have to do here coming up as we look for a job. So, graduation is coming. It's time to start searching for a career instead of a job. What's the difference between a job and a career? A job is what you do for money, while a career is the long-term endeavor being worked on and built upon daily to not only earn money but improve your life. So now that you found an interesting opportunity, it's time to submit your resume, but don't forget your cover letter. Now, cover letters and resumes are not the same thing. What's the difference? Well, your resume covers your educational, your work history, and any certifications or any interesting facts, skills, or information you wish to provide. Whereas a cover letter shows what you know about the company, what you know about the position, informing them why you're interested in the position, why you believe you are a good fit for the company in the position. And there is a little bit of discrepancy among my sources. Some say highlight your key achievements, others say don't because they're already on your resume. If they want your achievements, they can go to your resume. You're trying to sell yourself without recovering your resume. Otherwise, it's just a duplication. So, before you write your cover letter, do a little research on the company. Find out their history and what the company does, how long they've been in business, where they're located, where they're headquartered, do they have multiple sites? Find out as much as you can about the company culture. Find their code of ethics. Make sure you fit well within the company. Second, you want to find out who the hiring manager for the position is. Sometimes it's listed on the job description, sometimes it's not. I've called several locations and they are always happy to provide you with the hiring manager's name. Always address your cover letters directly to the hiring manager. It shows a little bit of Little bit of stick-to-itiveness, and the fact you're willing to look out there and see who the job manager is and find out, gather a little more information. This all ties together into presenting yourself more clearly. And then also look at their job description and compare to other similarly titled job descriptions. While they may have the same job description, jobs have completely different descriptions based on company. And that is one thing I've noticed. A cybersecurity analyst ranges from just SIEM review through aspects of penetration testing, management, tooling, risk management. There's a wide variety of types and cultures of positions out there. So you want to look and see how their job description compares to others in the industry so you know exactly what you're getting into. The cover letter should contain several things. Heading off with your contact information, the address, your name, address, telephone number, email address, possibly also including your LinkedIn profile, Facebook profile, or any other information you're willing to share. You want to then address the cover letter directly to the hiring manager if you can. This will be based on your research or the job description. If you can't find the hiring manager, you can always title it to the department manager or CIO if you're looking for one of those for a management role in the IT environment. So, as I said, there's a little discrepancy. Some people want to highlight your achievements. Others say leave that to your resume. So you can include that or not. But you always want to show your interest in the company and the position, describing both why you're interested in the company and why you're interested in the position. And also how you believe you'll fit within the company culture. You know, if you're looking for a teamwork position versus more of a siloed position, state, hey, I work great in teams, so I really want to be in a team environment, which I understand your company offers. Also, then present your understanding of the position, thereby comparing it to other positions within the industry so that everyone has a clear understanding of what you believe you're looking for, what you believe the company is looking for, and integrating the two to mesh and make sure that everyone is on the same page. Finally, always include a conclusion with appreciation, thanking them for their time to take to consider your resume, your cover letter for their employment position. I have an example that's actually color-coded to this as well. Let me switch screens here. Just a second. Okay, so this is an example cover letter. I actually wrote it to Marjorie. So you'll notice my contact information is at the top of the screen. Name, address, phone number, email address. Actually, hidden behind here is my LinkedIn account as well. Title directly to the hiring manager with name, position, and address of the company and location where they're hiring for. The salutation directed at this person. And then give your introduction, basically giving out what you believe the position is, where you found it, why you feel you'd be a great fit. Moving on to expound upon how you believe you'll fit within the company, how you'll utilize your experience and everything to gain the stages of career. Moving on to the job description here, giving some of the key points. Maybe this is where I would add in my achievements tying them back to the position they're actually looking for, how I've achieved success in this type of position before. And finally, the conclusion, taking the time to thank them for reviewing my resume and cover letter and looking forward to the opportunity to speak with them further before closing out with a simple thank you. Screens again.
Great job.
So, thank you. Sorry. All right, and that is my presentation for tonight. Any questions? Sorry, I went kind of fast there.
Well, that was great to have something like that on here, definitely, because you know everybody's going to be coming to that position here soon. When you graduate and you're looking for something, even if it is within your company and you already work there, maybe it's a different, you know, leader for a different department or something like that. You still want to make sure that you're writing cover letters with your resumes to go to who that is, even within a company that you're already familiar with. So this is great to have, definitely, to get a skill in that. That's good. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, next up, Michael Celestin. I'm going to enjoy this one. That'll be nice. That'll be fun.
Good evening, everyone. Good. No pressure at all then.
No.
How's everyone doing tonight? Go ahead and share my screen here. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and share my whole screen because there'll be a lot of tab switching. So hopefully you can see everything and hear me okay. So tonight I'll be going over Raspberry Pi and how to turn it into a portable Wi-Fi router. And the cool thing about this is that this, once you complete this, you'll have literally a router that you can take anywhere with you as long as you have access to open free internet and a power source. And you can connect to that free internet securely using password encrypted, and you can also set this up, which unfortunately I'm not going to go into tonight, but you can also set this device up to go through VPN encrypted traffic as well. So the first thing you need to do is gather all your tools. So some things you'll need. Here I have my Raspberry Pi depicted here, and you'll need one. I chose the Raspberry Pi 4, which is the latest model, and I chose that specifically because it has a built-in Wi-Fi adapter already, because you will need two wireless access points on this device for it to work properly, because one will be connecting to the open internet and the other will allow you to connect to it. So you can do it with older models. You'll just need two separate Wi-Fi routers. You'll also need a micro SD card with at least 16 gigabytes, I believe, is the bare minimum you'll need. I have some 32 gig cards here that I'm using. You'll need a micro SD USB reader so that you can plug the SD card into your computer and actually put the operating system onto the device. You'll need the Wi-Fi adapter, as I mentioned earlier, your power cord for your Raspberry Pi. This one's a USB-C, the power will connect right here, this location. And also this particular model came with a case, which it's good to have a case, especially if you're traveling with it, just to protect the computer, obviously. And also you'll need an Ethernet cable, which I don't have one depicted here, to connect the device to your laptop or computer. Some other resources you'll need. I have the links here for the OpenWRT, which is the operating system we'll be using, Imgur, as well as you'll need a Imgur to install the operating system onto your device. I use the Raspberry Pi official Imgur here. And you'll also need some way to SSH into the device. So if your computer doesn't natively support SSH, you can download something like PuTTY. I did not need to do that for this because I'm able to do it just through the command prompt. And that's what I'll show you guys how to do next. So we're going to go into our demo. Hopefully everything works well and I don't forget how to do any steps. So first thing we'll do is we'll head to our Internet Explorer here, or Edge now. And we will go to the OpenWRT wiki page. And you can see we'll scroll down here to installation, and there's a list of all the different types of Raspberry Pis. I have the Raspberry Pi 4B, so that's the one we'll download, and you'll just download it straight from here. I've already downloaded this, so I'm not going to do that here. And then You'll also go to raspberrypi.com and download the imager, which you can choose for whichever operating system you're working on. Once again, I've already downloaded this, so we'll pull the imager up itself. And this is super quick, easy thing to do here. You'll go ahead and scroll to use custom, navigate to wherever you have your OS saved, choose your storage device, which here I have it mounted as my eDrive, and then you'll write it. And this usually takes about maybe 10, 15 seconds. It's super quick. And once it's done here, there we go. We can now remove this. So I'm going to remove my SD card from my reader, from my computer, and plug it into my Raspberry Pi, which unfortunately you guys cannot see. All right. And now once that's plugged in, we're going to go ahead and power on our device, our Raspberry Pi. And we're going to also plug our Ethernet cable into our Raspberry Pi and then into our computer. And the first step, once we're plugged in, is we need to go to our control panel because we need to configure this Ethernet port so that it can speak to our Raspberry Pi. So the way we're going to do that is we're going to go to control panel, network and internet, network and sharing center. And you can see here is our port. So we'll just click on our Ethernet here, properties. Maybe we want to find our IPv4 properties. And we're going to change this to a static IP address. So the default IP address for the Raspberry Pi is 192.168.1.1 is default out of the box. This is also the most common default port, subnet, excuse me, for personal Wi-Fi routers. So we want to also make sure we're on the subnet. So we're going to go 192.168.1.10. This could be any IP address as long as it's on the same subnet. So we're going to apply this, close here, close this, and we'll leave this open because we'll be back. And now we will go into command line land. So once we're here, we're going to go ahead and SSH into our Raspberry Pi with an SSH command at username, which in this case is root, at the IP address, which is 198.162.1.1. And hopefully this works. Let me make sure I didn't do something wrong here. Oh, yep. There we go. See, I'm already confused my numbers. 192.168.1.1. There we go. And once again, SSH root at 192.168.1.1. And there we go. So we'll go ahead and put yes. And now we're in. You can see our open WRT. So we're going to go ahead now and move to the file path where the files are located that we need to edit. So we're now working in Linux. So we're going to do a CD for change directory to /etc/config. And we'll do an LS to list all the files. So you can see here we have several files. The three we're going to be working with tonight are firewall, network, and wireless. And when you're working with files like this, best practice is to always back them up. So that's the first thing we're going to do. We're going to do a CP to copy, and we'll copy our network to network.bk. This will make as for backup, and then we'll do CP firewall and a firewall.bk. Once more, CP wireless. .bk. And we'll do one more list to show that we do have our backups. So first thing we'll do here is we're going to edit our network command. And the way we're going to do that is with a file editor called vim. So the command for that is a vi, and network is the file we want. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to head down here to configure our LAN. 192.168.1.1 is the most commonly used IP address for home network routers. Hackers also know this, so this is one of the first things we need to change. So the way we'll do this is we're going to press I for input, and now we can edit this document. We're going to change this to a private IP address. I'm going to use 10.71.71.1. And we will then add another option to this interface. for force underscore link one. And what that does is it forces the device to keep this IP address that we set it to, regardless if it shuts down for whatever reason and it doesn't lose that IP and revert to default. Next, we're going to add a new interface. So we're going to do a config interface for our WAN. And then we'll tab down, tab over to line everything up so it looks nice and pretty. And we'll do an option for proto DHCP so we can have dynamic IP addresses. And we will also add option peer DNS, set that to 0. So it is working. And we will do an option DNS, and we'll give it two DNS servers. We'll do 1.1.1.1, which is Cloudflare, and 8.8.8.8, which is Google. This just gives you two pretty reliable, always available DNS servers. So hopefully they're always up. And then finally, we're going to do one more config interface for VPN client. And as I mentioned, I'm not going to go over how to add a VPN, unfortunately, to this tonight. But if you are going to do this on your own in the future, this is an option you want to make sure you have included. Do if name ton 0 and option proto or none. Okay, and now we're done here. So to get out of Vim, you're going to do an escape, colon, W for write, and Q for quit, enter. And now we're back. We'll go ahead and edit our firewall command now. And the only thing we're going to change in here, we're going to head down to config zone for the WAN, and we want to change this option input from reject to accept. So we're going to hit I for input and just type in accept here, and we're done. So we'll do escape, colon, WQ, and now we will reboot our Raspberry Pi to enact these changes. So while we're waiting for that to reboot up, you're going to see our connection here is going to disappear. Going to come back and then disappear one more time while it's trying to refine it. So now that we are on a DHCP, we can go ahead and change this port back to dynamic and get rid of that static IP address. We're going to go ahead and do that now. Properties, IPv4, properties, and back to automatically and DNS automatically. And we are done with this. Okay. Now, our next step is to SSH backin. And now we're going to use that new IP address we gave. So we're going to do another root at 10.71.71.1. Yes, and we're back in. And one thing I did forget to mention, actually, is you can see here there's no password for this device, which obviously is not a good deal. So we should change the password. You can see the command here is passwd. And this is standard for all Linux. We'll change this to something secure. All right, so now we have a new password. So we're going to change directory again back to our config file. And we're going to ls it to make sure we're in the right place. And we now want to change our wireless. So we'll do another vi wireless. Now, what we want to change here is we're going to set this radio 0. This is the internal Wi-Fi adapter for the Raspberry Pi itself. We want to make sure that it's configured so it can get internet so that we can go and update the drivers to be able to install our external Wi-Fi router or external Wi-Fi adapter, excuse me, so that we can use it as a wireless access point. And we're going to make some changes here. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, I'm not a wireless guru. So I don't know what most of these changes mean. I just know that they work. I've tried this with and without these, but after a lot of troubleshooting, I was told to enter these exact commands through pretty much the different areas I went to, and they work every time. So we're going to change our HW mode to 11G. We're going to change HT mode to HT20. We want to turn disabled 1 to disabled 0, so that disabled is turned off, so that the machine actually works. And then we are going to add one more option for short underscore GI underscore 40. Set that to 0. And now that is finished. We will do an escape, colon WQ, get out. And to make sure that the wireless changes are committed, we're going to do a UCI commit wireless command and then a Wi-Fi to turn Wi-Fi on. So now that the device has internet, we're going to head back to the internet and we're going to go into the GUI. So we're going to type in our IP address here, log into the device. And now we have a GUI interface. And you can also, all of the changes that I've shown you, you can do from here if you wish, if you're not comfortable doing it from the command line, it is possible. But what we want to do right now is we're going to head to wireless. You can see our Radio Zero is set up and we're going to scan for local networks. And I'm going to go ahead and connect this to my home internet so that we can download all of the packages we needed so that our Wi-Fi adapter works properly. And when you're doing this, you want to make sure you replace wireless configuration so that your Raspberry Pi has all the proper configs, and then enter in your passphrase or whatever internet you're connected to. We'll do a submit, save, then you want to save and apply, and we should see it pop up under associated stations. And here we are. We now have internet. So we'll head back to our command line. And we're going to now install our drivers. So the first thing we want to do is an OPKG update. And this will have the Raspberry Pi go out to the internet and update whatever packages it has, whatever ones we need to install so that they're the most current versions, so that there's no conflictions with any software. So now that that's done, we will install our actual drivers. And it's a very long command string, which I actually have it saved here just to save us a few minutes of time. And in order to paste into Linux, what you need to do is a control shift V, a little bit different than anyone who's familiar with Windows. And then we will run this and hopefully it starts installing it. So these are just all of the different drivers for this specific Wi-Fi router. I've also installed Nano, as you can see here at the very end, which is a different text editing software. I'll show you how to use that shortly once this is finished, but we won't actually change anything with it. It's just, some people prefer Nano to VI just because it's a little more user-friendly. All right, so now that the drivers are finished, we're going to type in the IF. I'm sorry, we will not do this just yet. What we're going to do is do an... I'll show you Nano. So we'll do a Nano firewall. Let's see, we've installed this. It's a little bit different, a little more user-friendly. So we're just going to go back. What we did before is change this accept. We're going to change it to accept again. But the difference with Nano is that you don't have to press I for input. You can just start typing. So we'll change this back to accept again. And to save your changes here, you're going to do a control X, Y for yes, and enter. Save changes. So now that we've installed our packages, an IF config WLAN1 up. We're going to run this command. If it works, which it did, no error messages, that means all of our drivers are up and running. And then the last step for this process is we're going to change our wireless one more time so that we can set up the wireless access point itself. So we'll do another V wireless. Now, I'm not going to actually show this on screen because once I open this document, it's going to show all of the information for all of the networks I'm connected to, which includes my home network right now. And I don't really want to show everyone my my wireless password. So I do have, this is what you would see saved in the document in addition to the other files. So I can show you here what it would look like. So we're just going to pretend we're in VI and scroll down here, press I for input. Change the 1 to a 0 so that disabled is turned off. And then we're going to come down and you can change your SSID here. We're going to call it Optimus Pi and change your encryption to a PSK2 and add option key for your password. And we'll go with Autobots rollout. And then again, we're in VI, so we'll do a colon. Escape colon WQ to save those changes. And I'm actually going to go ahead and stop sharing my screen here for just a second so I can apply those changes and then come back and show you that they actually worked and finish out this talk. So give me just 1 second. I'm going to BI into wireless here. Head down to Radio 1, I am I for input, change disabled to one, I'm sorry, from one to zero, change our OpenWRT SSID to Optimus Pi, encryption to PSK2, and we're adding option key to Autobots rollout. And then we're going to escape colon WQ, and we're back. And let me share my screen one last time. And since we changed our wireless, we want to make sure we commit. So we'll do a UCI commit wireless and Wi-Fi to turn it on. And it should be working. And just to prove that it did work, I'm going to open my Wi-Fi here. And you can see right here, we have Optimus Pi, which has encryption on it. So if I were to connect to that, I would have working internet. I'm not going to do that, obviously, because I'll probably lose connection and drop the call. And then the very last thing is, if for whatever reason you're doing this, this is just a useful Linux tip. If you're working in this and you mess something up and you feel like you have no idea where you are and you want to restart the whole process, you can do the command first boot, which is a hard reset of the device back to factory default, do and reboot now. And that will factory reset and reboot the machine. As you can see here, it says all settings will be removed and packages will be uninstalled. Yes, we are sure. And yeah, we have a brand new, ready to go again, reconfigure Raspberry Pi. And that brings you to your finished product, which is literally a wireless router that can fit in the palm of your hand. You can take it with you anywhere that, as long as you have a power source and internet. That concludes my discussion for my masterclass. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk. I hope you had a wonderful evening.
All right. I knew that was going to be fun, but I need you to do it all over again so I can learn it again.
Right. This is my first attempt doing something like this. I did this probably 8 or 9 times this week just to make sure I understood everything. But luckily, yeah, we have a recording and we can go back and watch it.
Exactly.
We have a recording.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That was great. Yeah, that was really cool. Okay. So I'm going to do a quick question because I got to go teach. But my quick question for this is, really, what significantly are Raspberry Pis for? Just to have?
My understanding is they're an open source community project. Well, I guess they're not open source because they're proprietary, but they're a community project that the company Raspberry Pi started so that people can just kind of get used to one working with Linux and have fun projects to work on, because they're tiny computers, as you can see, it fits in my hand, that can really do a whole lot of things. And because it's Linux, really the sky is open, is the limit for what people want to write them for. So I don't know that they have a dedicated use. I could be wrong. You know, if somebody knows better, please correct me, an original use. But I know at this point they're kind of just toys. They're computer toys for IT geeks. So yeah, I think we should get some.
Yes, okay. The original idea was they were made for education. They wanted something, a cheap computer, like a very cheap computer, like you can get one for $10, $20, so people can learn from it. And then they came with it, and they had such a huge success that now everyone uses for, like he said, sky's the limit. You can do pretty much anything you wanted to.
Yeah, I think I'll buy something like that for my kids, and the three of us will do it, see what we can come up with.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Great way to learn whatever concepts you want. Like this one is great to learn networking, Linux. Obviously, they all work in Linux. You can turn them into the call of Pi hole is another popular use, where it blocks all incoming ad traffic. You put it in front of your DNS server or in front of your Wi-Fi router. And any ads that come in, you can blacklist them. So if you're watching YouTube or on scrolling Facebook, you won't see those ads. You can turn it into an emulator, RetroPie, they call it. It's like you make your own Game Boy. There's tons of applications.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. That was awesome. Yes, Monica, you can download the recordings. Just have to go into the tonight or tomorrow, I'm going to probably go ahead and rename it and put it into the PGIP Tech stream. But you'll find it for today's date. and everybody who has presented on here tonight too. Well, awesome. Those were two great ones. Very important for both of those. Last one we have is Edward Fernandez. Come on down.
Good evening, everyone. I hope you're all doing well. Tonight I'll be talking about VI, actually. So it's good that Michael already introduced it. But in case you all wanted to learn a little more about it, let me share my screen real quick. All right, so right now I have my PowerShell open and I have NeoVim installed. Basically, NeoVim is like a newer version, a fork of Vim, which is in a new code base, supposed to be more maintainability, more features, that type of thing. But it's all compatible with any configuration that you would have in Vim. So my presentation is going to be kind of in two parts. The first one is going to be like administrative, what VI can be used for administratively, because VI is included in pretty much every Linux distribution. So it's a good skill to have in case you're remoting to some and you have to administer some remote machine that doesn't have any other text editor in it. So you would start it up with VI. I don't have VI installed in my computer. I have NVIM, but it works pretty much the same way. So you get your introduction right here. Now, the way that VI works, it has four basic modes. They're the normal input modes, the visual mode, and the terminal mode. Now, there are other modes that I'm not completely familiar with. They're a little more complicated, but for everyday use, you don't really need them. But, you know, there are many options, you know, very powerful things that you can do. Let me see. So in normal mode, you can input commands, editing commands. Everything can be done through the keyboard. Now, to edit input, to go to input mode, we would press I, then we can start typing. So we can say this is a sentence. And when you're in input mode, you can move around with the arrow keys. You can click around. Now, if you're remoting into a machine, you probably can't use your mouse, but that's what's nice about being able to do everything with the keyboard. So to exit input mode and go back to normal mode, you can just press escape. And then we can navigate using the home row keys on our right hand. So you could press, if you have your hands on the home row with your index fingers there on the F and the J on your right hand, you can navigate left with H. You can move right with L. Now, if we have another line, you can move up with K and you can move down with J. So we can move around just by using the keyboard. Let's see, what else do I have? So these are moving just one character at a time. If you put in, now every command that you put in Vim, you can multiply it. So if you press a number first, like if you press 2, and then you press H, it'll move left 2 times. If you press 5 and press L, it'll move right 5 times. So that's something you can do. Now, there are many more commands that you can do in normal mode. You can press U to undo. And you can press Control R to redo. You can also press X to delete a certain character. So if I had a typo, you can just press X and you can remove one character that way, and then I can undo to bring it back. Then there's also W. If you press W, it moves to the next word. It'll even move across lines as well. So if I go back up, I press W, it goes to the next word, which is on the next line. You can also press E to go to the end of a word. So if you keep pressing E, it'll go to the end of each word. You can also press B to go back. So you can move across all these words just by using a keyboard. Pressing W, not pressing B, pressing E to go to the end. You can also go to the beginning of a line by pressing 0. You can go to the end of a line by pressing Shift 4, so that'd be like the dollar sign. That one's a little clunky, I guess you could say. But the nice thing about Vim is that you can customize all your key bindings. Although this is a default one. If you're remoting to another machine, you probably won't have your own key bindings. Now there's also Y for yank or copy. You know, they call that yank, but you can copy by pressing Y. If you press Y and W, you will copy the word that you're on right now. So I just pressed YW. I copied the word, and I can press P to paste it. So it pastes the word that I copied right here where the cursor is. Now, if I press Shift P, it'll paste it before the cursor, so it won't paste in the middle of the word. Let me see what else. Now, the D key is a deletion key. So we can delete one character with X. But if we wanted to delete a word, we could press delete, so D and W, and that would delete the word that we're on right now. So if you're in the middle of a word, it'll just delete part of it. But if you really have to be at the beginning of the word for it to delete, you know, the word that you're on. Let me see. You can also press D twice to delete a line. So that makes it easy. That's something you do pretty often in programming, is a delete a line. Something else that's also nice about Vim is that whenever you delete something, it puts it into your to your clipboard. So once I delete this line, I can just press P to paste it again. And I can just keep pasting it because it's in my clipboard now. So there isn't a specific like cut command like you would have in Windows because it always does it whenever you delete, which is also something you have to watch out for, because you could replace whatever is in your clipboard when you delete something, although you can configure that as well. You can press /// to search. So you can see out here at the bottom, this changed. So if I press escape to go back, I press /, it goes down here and I can start searching. So if I search this, it'll highlight every time that this comes up. If I press enter, then I can start navigating through every occurrence of my search term. So if I press N, it'll go to the next one. So if I have the cursor out here somewhere, I press N and it goes to the next one. I know there is a pretty long, there can be a pretty long learning curve for learning this, because there are a lot of commands and it doesn't tell you them anywhere, which is why a lot of people like to use Nano, because it tells you here at the bottom what all the keyboard commands are. And you can just type normally, like if it was Notepad. You know, being able to do all this without having to touch the mouse at all can be a pretty pretty good efficiency boost once you learn how to do it. Okay, so there are many ways to enter input mode. You know, there's just a couple basic ones that are pretty useful in everyday work. So if I press I, it'll put the cursor right before where I've highlighted. So if I wanted to add to the end of a sentence, I would press A to put the cursor in front of where I was highlighted. So then I can type a little more on the sentence. Let's see. We also have O. If you press O, it'll enter input mode on the next line. Or if you press Shift O, it'll enter input mode and insert a line above where you are. So you can see I made a space and I can start typing. All right. So now here's the elephant in the room. How do I exit Vim? Now, because it's a joke, really. You know, if there's this whole thing, like someone asked on Stack Overflow, how do I exit Vim? And it became really famous. Because it is kind of difficult if you don't know how. But as Michael so kindly explained, when you're in input mode, you press escape, then you press colon, and you can press Q to escape. Now, if I try doing this right now, it'll tell me that I haven't written anything. I haven't written the file. I haven't saved it. So it won't let me quit. If I don't care about what I wrote in here, I can just press Q and exclamation point, and I'll be back in my terminal. And then I can come back in. Now, it even tells you right here when you first open it how to exit, because that's pretty helpful. Now, if you want to write the file, you would write W. Oh, actually, I forgot to mention, when you're in normal mode, you press colon and you go into command mode. You can see how the word changes down here. That's what it's called. And then, so once you press colon, you can press W, you write your file. Now, if there's no file name, then you have to write your file name, and then it writes it. If we could, we can see that I have a file name right here. Now, something that's nice about Vim is that if you open your current directory, you can even navigate through your directory using the same navigation keys that you use while you're editing, and you can just navigate through directories, and you can open up your file like that. So that's the first part where we talk about how you can use this for everyday text editing, because you know how Linux, you configure mostly with text files. But Vim can also be really helpful with your personal text editing, software development, and things like that. But usually you would want to use Vim or NeoVim, because VI is pretty old. It's not as used anymore. But we do have Vim, spelled V-I-M, which is included in many Linux distributions as well. Maybe not quite as many as VI. And then there's also NeoVim, which is what I use. It's all written in Python, a new code base. And it has, you know, slightly better plugin support, but it is also backwards compatible with almost all Vim plugins and configurations. I say almost because there are just a couple of edge cases where it's not compatible. I'm not exactly sure which ones they are, but it hasn't affected me at all. So an example of a plugin would be like what I have down here in this status bar. This is not how NeoVim comes by default. All these colors, these colors change depending on the status of the file. So if I write the file, see how this is gray. When I go into insert mode, it's blue. And then when I start typing, it turns purple, meaning that I've changed the file, but I have not written it yet. So that's something nice. This plugin is called Vim Airline. If you look it up, you can Vim Airline like that. You can look it up in GitHub. And there are many, many plugins that you can get. Plugins that give you linting, fuzzy search, new language support. Like if you wanted to write in Elm or Rust, you know, all these languages that aren't supported by default. Let's see. You can just look them up in GitHub, and the easiest way to manage your plugins, I'd say, would be to use Vimplug, something that's called Vimplug like that. If you look that up, it's very easy to install because there are many plugin managers that you could use, but I'd say this one's the easiest one. Right now, if I go to my configuration file, I can show you how it looks. So this is my configuration file. It's kind of messy, but you know, over the years I've added a bunch of things to here. But down here is where Vimplug configuration begins, and you can see these are just GitHub addresses. So you know how you would have HTTPS GitHub and then github.com/, and then this would be the end of the address around here. You just put that in, plug, and then the address. And then once that is in your configuration file, all you have to do is type plug install, and it'll automatically clone those plugins and install them, and you're good to go. Once they're installed, you can just click plug update and it'll clone them again. Now, most of these plugins, I installed them a very long time ago, and not all of them work. I'm not an expert in Vim by any means. But, you know, some of these, like this one's just a color scheme. This one gives you Elm support because I played with that a long time ago. This one gives you some auto completion snippets that I have not been able to get working. This one is a plugin to automatically put like HTML tags. Closing, like right when you type HTML, it'll put a closing HTML tag, that type of thing. This autocorrect is pretty helpful because, you know, this text editor doesn't come with autocorrect automatically, but if I type a typo or something, well, it depends on the word. You can configure typos that you type pretty often. But if it recognizes something that you mistype, it can automatically correct it for you. So that's my quick rundown of Vim and NeoVim. I hope it was interesting and that y'all can learn a little bit more about it and see if it works for you.
That was awesome, but I don't want you to tell me that you know those by heart, all those commands.
Well, the ones you know I showed them? At the beginning, the ones I showed at the beginning, I do.
That's just scary, Edward. That is scary.
It becomes muscle memory after a while.
That was really great. I am not a huge fan of the command line on any program, but that was really neat.
Well, then, good job. I just feel old after that because I learned VI
exactly
when there was just VI.
Oh, it wow.
It was a black and white screen with a flashing cursor. Yeah, so, yeah. Those are the old days. The 90s, folks, before you were born.
Yeah, it's still around.
Well, at least it wasn't punch cards.
Oh, hey, I did that, too. I did that in junior college. Thank you very much. I worked in the bookstore, and we had them shrink-wrapped, for sure.
There you go.
See, Landon, we're old.
I learned on an Apple IIe Basic. That's command lines, print, flash, all that. I'm old too.
Come on, Apple was fancy in my book. I had the Commodore.
Well, I had a Commodore 64. Well, I didn't have one, but my friend did. So yeah. Oh, takes me back. Uh-huh. But great job, everyone. Does anyone have any questions for any of our three presenters?
No, I just want to thank you all for their presentations.
I agree. Yeah, great variety.
That was great. Great information. My head is scrambling right now with all that knowledge. And I love these Thursday nights. I really do. When I was an intern and since then, we had the maintenance and training, which somebody would come on and you know, highlight a skill or something like that. But it was more like a training. And this is just great because you get to show off what you know. And I'm really impressed every week. I look forward to this seminar or webinar or whatever you want to call it, meeting. But great job, everyone. And it will be uploaded. And you can retrieve it once Marjorie has uploaded it. And learn from the professionals. If no one has anything else, I will say good night and everyone have a great night. Have a great weekend and we'll see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Good night. Thanks, everyone.
Good night, everyone. Hey, Marcy, you got a second off the recording?
Yeah, sure. Turn it off. Hold on one second.
You run one of the departments, correct?